All right. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Oh, it's good to be back. It's a little bit colder this week. The Father's good to us, isn't he? We've been getting some phenomenal examples of flesh versus spirit. And I'm really encouraged tonight to share what I was able to get, you know, even at my house, being out of routine, you know, down and out. Like I said, Wednesday night, it really actually gave me a deeper appreciation for being able to have routine. And I know it's just, it's 1 week. But whenever you're a spiritual creature and you're learning to walk in that you crave that, you miss it. And usually it's an unfortunate human condition that we end up missing things once we don't have it for whatever reason. So to be able to get it back it's a beautiful thing. And so tonight I wanted to expound upon what I was able to find in regards to what was presented to us last Shabbat. And that's, in other words, really didn't get much further. Looked at wisdom and discernment, the next verse, but it was a quick look at because me and the wife got caught up in a little special teaching that we're going to have tomorrow. So it's going to be a fun one. I'm not going to spoil anything. But we're going to go ahead and get into this and start looking at some more of the Spirit and different matters that we can look at in Scripture, revolving around Genesis 41, verse 38, of course, in our Torah portion, looking at the life of Yosef. And we know that verse reads, "And Pharaoh said to his servants, could we find another like him, a man in whom is the spirit of Elohim?" And that's it's a beautiful verse to look at and be able to understand that's the goal for us, is to be able to reflect the Father so well that even those that don't serve him can see it radiating off of us. And what's incredible about Ruach and it being such a timely word about routine is literally the week prior to last week, so 2 weeks ago. It's something that I was getting hit with a hard realization that I need to work on. I need to make sure, fine-tune and make sure my routine is reflecting more of the Father. Because in the flesh, it's so easy for us to get distracted. Mm-hmm. So easy, especially in the times we're living in. The enemy wants us distracted, especially when there's so much on the line right now. And the Father has us perfectly positioned in this word for us to be able to receive the things that we need in the time that we're in. So it's so important. But of course, with that being said, I was struggling with matters of the flesh in regards to routine. And it's a beautiful thing to see how the Spirit flows and the timing and the word that goes forth and the lesson that came from it also, to just be able to let it resonate with you better. Because, and that being said, you know, I said Wednesday night that now I'm encouraged to fine-tune my routine, to make sure that I'm showing the Father the level of commitment that I want to bring forth to the table, so that way there's no excuses for anything. And of course, you proclaim something, then the test comes, naturally. And with that being said, like literally the next day, yesterday, and Wednesday, a lot of things changed at work. Time got rescheduled. Different things fell out of what even was already on top of my normal routine and got flipped around. So then it was automatic test to see if I'm going to go ahead and stick to what it is that I discussed with the Father. And it's a beautiful thing that he does that for us. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he cares about what our outside man looks like, or being the man outside, or the woman outside, because it genuinely matters what we're reflecting when we're out there. And that was such a powerful thing that I was able to resonate with, because a lot of times there's a whole lot of garbage that comes out of the garbage man that he doesn't really want, but if you're going to go ahead and sow to the flesh, you know what's going to happen. And it could be little minute things that we get caught up in, but he cares about that because we're supposed to reflect his character. And thankfully, he gives us that set-apart conviction whenever we need it. But he wants us on that prescribed path, and that involves routine, as we were taught last Shabbat. And of course, going into the Greek, whenever we saw in Romans 8:1 what was brought up about flesh And this is just a review right now. I'm sure this is all fresh and familiar with everyone. But me being not around made me feel like I missed out on being able to share. But there is then now no condemnation to those who are in Messiah Yeshua, who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. And it was brought up to us about sarks, about what spirit is in the Greek understanding and the deeper meaning and it being our human nature. I mean spirit, flesh. That's a flesh moment of itself. And our human nature, and then sorrow. That sweeping motion. And of course, whenever I was listening to that, it instantly made me think about how sorrowful I can be every time I procrastinate, sweep something underneath the rug. You don't just deal with the problem. How many of us know that the Father wants us to deal with every little speck of dirt that we have that we're, you know, just trying to brush aside because we think we've got more important things? He cares about every little detail of our life. And we owe it to Him to make sure that we're not doing anything half-heartedly. And these are the things, the inner dialogue that was resonating within me. And then, of course, I took a moment, a Selah moment, a pause moment, a meditative moment. And then Matthew 12 came into mind. And it's interesting how it works. Because I can't tell you the last time I was in this area reading anything in Matthew 12. But this something as simple as a gesture of sweeping can trigger something that you once read maybe years ago or months ago. And I gave a little bit of that on Wednesday on the three words that we're going to deal with. But I'd like to get the context out there. So we're going to start with Matthew 12, verse 22. It was tempting to go to verse 1, but the direct context starts with verse 22. And this is still reflecting matters of flesh versus spirit. And it's, interestingly enough, titled Blasphemy Against the Holy Spirit, the set-apart spirit. But then they brought to Him one who was demon-possessed, blind and dumb, and He healed him, so that the blind and dumb man both spoke and saw. And all the crowds were amazed and said, "Is this the son of David?" But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This one does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons." Which, honestly, I really didn't have that much of a mental picture of until Brother Chad had brought it up Wednesday night in regards to his studies that were reflecting upon Beelzebub, that specific one, being that imagery of that fly with the stinger. And of course, I see flies all the time where I work, and I know what they like to feast on, and it's always usually something to do with rotten flesh or rotten something. And a lot of them are not really picky, but it's pretty gross when you get to have the moments to witness that. But as he was speaking about it, he brought up the fact that this Beelzebub had a stinger, and of course that stinger represents this sting of sin, the sting of death. And then, of course, I was thinking about the flies, how they consume flesh. And we know that the matters of the enemy are always going to be that. He wants us to feel the sting of sin so that way he can consume our flesh. But, of course, those that were truly blind are trying to accuse our Messiah of being an authority of that specific fly. When the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This one does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons." And Yeshua knew their thoughts and said to them, "Every rain divided against itself is laid waste, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. If Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then does his reign stand? And if I, by Beelzebub, do cast out demons, by whom do your sons cast them out? Because of this, they shall be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of Elohim, then the reign of Elohim has come upon you." And I know it's kind of a gross topic, but on the topic of flies and those certain things, they're parasitic. They're parasites. there's something that if you are exposed too much of, it gets on you and then it tries to, you know, become a part of you in a very disgusting and awful way. And a lot of times, if we're not careful, and as much as we think we can hide the smell or hide the shape, our words, our actions, our behavior will show if we got a parasite problem, if we got a flesh problem, if we got something dwelling within us that's not the Spirit of Almighty Yah. And thankfully, we have a Messiah that gives us authority to cast out these things. I believe I was on verse 28. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of Elohim, then the reign of Elohim has come upon you. Or how is one able to enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man? And then he shall plunder his house. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. Because of this, I say to you, all sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven men, but blasphemy against the Spirit shall not be forgiven men. And whoever speaks a word against the Son of Adam, it shall be forgiven him. But whoever speaks against the set apart Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him, either in this age or in the age to come. Some pretty heavy words from our Messiah, because the fact is we do have an all-loving and forgiving Father, but there is a sin that won't be forgiven. And it resonated on me because the other day, and I'm sure maybe a few others have potentially heard about it, but I know there's been a lot of growth going on with AI. And then I come across this information that was on my feed. My YouTube algorithm, my YouTube recommendation feed is very interesting. A lot of Torah, a lot of revelations, a lot of political stuff. But this pops up on the feed, and I watch it because it's titled AI Jesus. So there's already implementing overseas into congregations and churches. They're no longer using pastors anymore, but they have this holographic or television screen, AI Jesus. Kind of like, doesn't even feel like reality anymore, to be honest, because in essence, even one of the creators of AI, Elon Musk, I can quote from one of his interviews that he compared AI to as if you were awakening a demon, awakening a spirit. When you think about it, it's an unseen presence that has infinite amount of information that provides information to help you, to help you. And then, you know, you let these things kind of resonate and you think about it. To the degree when you think about it, that is blasphemy of the Father's true set apart Spirit. That's something that I believe that is detrimental and important to be mindful of. This is something I've had conversations with gentlemen at work, because there's a lot of people that get really excited about technology, and do not get me wrong, technology, it's not a bad thing if you use it correctly, but there's such a very, very fine line, a very fine line. Every time it comes to this phone or different types of technology, it does remind me of the fact that whenever David slew Goliath, he first used that sling, sent that stone. We know that stone could represent Messiah. That stone could represent the Word, because he had five smooth stones that could represent the five books of the Torah, and that it goes on and on and on. But he finished the job with Goliath's own sword. So this device could be seen as a device of the enemy, but if we use it properly, it could be the very thing that severs the enemy's head. So there's a very fine line with that. But I thought that was interesting, and it wasn't even in my notes to share, but it came back in that moment. And that's something that I pray to the Father about. But let's continue on in Matthew 12, in the words of our Messiah in regards to understanding the Spirit and casting out the unclean. But it says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree rotten and its fruit rotten. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of adders, how are you able to speak what is good, being wicked? For the mouth speaks from the overflow of the heart. The good man brings forth
what is good from the good treasures of his heart. And the wicked man brings forth what is wicked from the wicked treasure.
And I say to you that for every idle word men speak, they shall give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be declared righteous, and by your words you shall be declared unrighteous. And we're going to move past the sign of Jonah, because it's always a good read, but it's interesting because the way it's inserted there, as he was dealing with the spirit of Almighty Yah and the difference between that and the unclean spirits, it's kind of like one of the Pharisees hurry up, popped up and asked for it. What kind of signs we can look for? And then it goes right back into what we're reading. So we're going to move down to verse 43. But that one's titled Return of an Unclean Spirit. And this is the thing that really, really hit home for me, because there's been many a times in my walk in the past 8 years. Now, when I came into this thing, I don't know if you can picture, like, in whatever maybe movie or however your imagination may work, but picture an automobile rolling down the road and just barely making it, nuts and bolts falling off, and then there goes the wheel, and there goes this, and the static's going on in the radio. That was my condition coming in here. It was very memorable. And I'm thankful for that very first service. It was very powerful, and a hook, line, and sinker. And that's, you know, and the Father's timing is so impeccable. The right place at the right time. And the restoration process that took place for this bucket of bolts, I'm very thankful. But the reason I bring that up in regards to this, because at that time of carnality to the maximum level, I have no idea anything about unclean spirits or demonic forces, other than the movies I watched. You know, I watched a little TV show called Supernatural, and all they would show is this dark cloud floating around and then going into somebody, and then they would be different. And then that's kind of the gist of all I understood about that. But interestingly enough, at one point, because of all the decision I had, and I ended up in medical condition at a hospital, I ended up with a long list of different diagnoses. I'm talking about mental health. So, and that's one of the things that I always struggled with sharing about, because it's almost embarrassing, but the realization is that's what's on the other side of the spirit of the Father. Mm-hmm. Just brokenness, labels, pet names that doctors can give you. It comes with a whole sort of what they call goodies that are just band-aids that end up leading to more problems later on. And I know one of the biggest ones that I dealt with was night terrors and PTSD. And I kept, you know, when I first met my wonderful wife, I wanted to let her know ahead of time, like, look, this is what I'm dealing with, all this and that, this is what's going on. And then she hit me with, you don't have to claim it. You don't have to claim it. God bless you. You don't have to claim it. Because that's the biggest thing, is the flesh wants people to feel sorry for themselves so that way they can continue going the route that they're going. And at the time, I was so puffed up and thought I was a man that, oh no, I don't want nobody to feel sorry for me. That's not why I'm doing this. But no, feeling sorry for yourself got me there. And because it wouldn't let go. It wouldn't let go of that. And I would wake up screaming in the night. I'd wake up unrestful, cold sweats. It was terrible. Terrible. I know this is a drawn out point, but the matter of the fact is, it's something that I can resonate with because I experienced it firsthand. I noticed the more I gravitated towards the things of God, the more that I kept drawing near His marvelous light, kept coming here, being surrounded by people that pursue, and I get it. Nobody's perfect, but we're trying to work our way there. And thankfully, I stuck around long enough to see what the Father wants for our lives. And then all of a sudden, I'll never forget the dream. I'm not going to go into full detail of the dream, but I remember speaking to an ancient Hebrew woman that was looked older than time and had gold eyes and had this little ancient hat on, and pastor was sitting on a couch off on the side. He had a brown suit on. The couch was brown. The room was brown. Everything was almost brown. And I'll never forget, she was speaking to me in Hebrew. Now, could I remember the words? No. And then all of a sudden, she started pouring pebbles, blue pebbles, yellow pebbles, and then looked at me and then said something, grabbed my hands and told me to hold them like this, I guess. Or like forced me to hold them like that because I couldn't understand her. And then whenever I saw the gold in her eyes turn black, but just a little gold around, black pebbles started flying out my mouth, gushing out my mouth. And then I felt a relief. The pastor stood up with his notepad, was taking notes. He said, "You're good to go. It's done." And then I woke up in a hospital bed. And well, that's always messes with you when you have a dream and you wake up in a dream. You wake up in a hospital bed in Africa. Male nurse walks in, tells you, "You're healed. Now you can go forward." And I woke up completely feeling like a new being, completely like a new person, reinvigorated, afresh, able to receive. And I was starting to understand things quicker. I was starting to walk. I was going real good for a while. But then all it takes is just a little bit of entertaining the flesh. Now, I'm still 100% cured. Praise Almighty Yah from all the things that I once dealt with, them unclean spirits. But all it takes is just a little bit of attitude, a little bit of misrepresentation of character, and that can set you off of alignment. And it's subtle. It's very subtle. Because it's something that's just like, it's not as bad as murder. It's not as bad as this. It's not as bad as that. No, sin is sin. And it's an open door. And that's what we're about to look at, as an example of what happens if you don't continually walk these things out and exercise these things to keep yourself clean, to be able to keep walking in that set-apart spirit. Because the realism of that being shared is it's just that easy. If you keep sowing to the flesh, it's just going to get worse. And we're going to see in this example that that's exactly what happens whenever you pretend to be good when you're not. Verse 43 of chapter 12 of Matthew, where it says, "Now when the unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places, seeking rest, and finds none." And he's going through the dry places because anywhere that where it's wet, it represents the word, the water. So the spirits don't want to mess with that. But then it says, "I shall return." This unclean spirit says, "I shall return to my house from which I came." And when it comes, it finds it empty, swept, and decorated. Why? Because it was given access to get back in. We don't refill ourselves with the Spirit whenever the Father provides healing in our life, or revelation, or understanding, and we just continue to pretend that we're good, but in reality is we kind of swept things under the rug, made it nice and empty in the house, it looks fine, and didn't even decorate it. But the interesting thing about the word decorated, it has another meaning to it. But we're going to look at empty, swept, and decorated. So empty is skolazo, just G4980. And skolazo means to take a holiday. That is to be at leisure for. Figuratively, to be vacant. Or in other words, there but not there. To cease, this is the Thayer's definition, to cease from labor, to loiter, to be from labor, to be free from labor, to be at leisure, to be idle,
to have leisure for a thing, to give oneself to a thing, of things, of places, to be unoccupied, empty, of a centurion's vacant office, a vacant ecclesiastical offices. Almost got in trouble. Of officers without charge. So, naturally, when we go through that and it magnifies the word, it breaks that word up and it pounds it down to its raw form so you can get the minerals from it. And then what you realize is there's a saying I used to hear all the time from my grandparents. Idle hands is the devil's plans. We have so much that we can stay busy with to make sure that we're representing the Father well, that no matter what we're going through, we're ready for it. But if we're idle, if we're empty, if we're sowing to the flesh, because the flesh, like I was said, you could watch a 4-hour, 5-hour movie till 2 in the morning and feel like, oh yeah, I'm good. Hop into the Word. Ain't that right? You get into that Word 10, 15 minutes, make sure your pillow's not close. Make sure your pillow's not close. And I literally said Wednesday night, there's been times where and you can ask my wife, she probably heard me say it out loud before, I'll be sitting at the table, and the first yawn that comes out my mouth, I start rebuking the spirit of slumber. You're not getting me. I need to spend this time. And time is valuable, very valuable. So we're familiar with sweat. We know that's sorrow. And that's G4, 5, 6, 3. And that's the brush to sweep. And that could also represent us just putting things aside. Because usually, in all honesty, when we're idle, when we're being empty, is the easiest whenever it's just we brush things aside. I'll do it later. I need to relax. I need to just take this little time. You could turn 5 minutes into an hour real quick. Especially, you know, something that Mark Zuckerberg made called Facebook. So, if you scroll on that. In my case, Snapchat. Anyway. Decorate it. Let's look at decorate it. And I thought this was interesting. G2885 is cosmeo. Almost sounds like cosmetology. But it's to put in proper order. That is to decorate. It also means specifically to snuff a wick. So the house is empty. Everything's been arranged. Everything's empty. And now we're dealing with the sweeping underneath the rug. And I was talking about snuffing a wick. So lights are off. So it gives you a visualization of an empty home that's in darkness. And naturally, what do unclean spirits like? Is darkness. And it's all matters of dealing with the flesh. If we keep, in simple terms, wasting our time with things of the flesh, we should not expect to grow in the spirit. We should not expect to start to see things change that we want changed. Because the Father loves us enough to make sure that we're actually putting in the time, putting in the effort, so that way we could see the blessings manifest in our life. And the beautiful thing is, all he's asking from us is our dedication and time to reflect his character. So that way, on the potential that we get the opportunity to get presented before important people, like Yosef did in front of Pharaoh, and ultimately saving thousands, probably millions of lives during that crisis, if we're given something kind of opportunity like that, it's going to be given to those that are willing to press forward and be trustworthy. But even on the micro scale, even on our scale, there's people in our lives that we care about and that we love, that we want to see succeed, but their shot is potentially lessened, dependent on our ability to actually go forth and do what it is that the Father called us to do. No, I think a lot about my sister.
I think a lot about a lot of family and a lot of people. But she comes to mind recently because she's showing that interest. And this is someone, this was the sibling that me and her did not get along. I tied her Barbie doll's hairs together and made a little boomerang thing and threw it into the ceiling fan. And I started singing, "It's a Barbie world." She'll never let me live it down. She'll never let me live it down. But, you know, and of course, my parents always used to say, "Y'all two can be best friends whenever y'all grow up. Y'all just alike." I'm like, no, there's no way. But, of course, now almost daily we speak. And she's showing a major interest into the Word and understanding the relationship with the Father. And she can rely on me, the light that I chose to be in my life, to be able to shine onto her. And that's something I hold on to and is valuable to everyone that we get to be a light to. That's the importance of making sure that we don't get idle in our good doing. And making sure that, because there's things that we currently deal with and fight off to protect that light that's in us, because it's up to us if we want to give it up. Or we surrender it, and the next thing you know, it all comes flooding back. And he doesn't want that. We shouldn't want that. So we got to put up that good fight. And make sure that we're trained well. I don't know. That has to do a lot with tomorrow's little marriage study. So I'm just giving a little hint. But no, we're not duking it out. Wait, let's keep going forward. Then it goes, speaking about this spirit, then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself. And they enter and dwell there. And the last of that man is worse than the first. So shall it also be with this wicked generation. You know, letting the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all those that weren't truly giving themselves over to the Father. Some strong words. But another verse that stood out from what was presented Shabbat was that Romans 8:5. And I'm just going to quote it. I was going to go through more detail, but we've already had it. And I was just really excited to re-share some of these things that really meant a lot to me, that helped me in that timely word, as usual. But remember that verse 5 says, "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the matter of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the matters of the Spirit." Our matters matter, but I'm going to go ahead and move past that. Yes. I started making our way to some of the areas that the Father was dealing with me this week to share. There we go. But with those things in mind, flesh versus spirit, routine, how we present ourselves, what we do. As somebody that really enjoys physical fitness, not as much as I used to, but not in the sense of not enjoying it, but time spent. But whenever it comes to it, it's very structured. Its structure is very unique. There's different programs. And the thing is, we know that whenever it comes to our testing and it's flesh versus spirit, there's things that we can do in the physical that helps discipline the flesh to give more power for the spirit to operate in. And when I was sitting there resonating with it and thinking about it and thinking about workout plans at the same time, you know, it hit me, because each workout is designed for a different person's set goals. If you want better cardio, you go through endurance. You don't really worry much about the weights or challenging the muscle or anything like that. You just kind of stick it out with running and how long you can maintain a certain amount of endurance in that set course. And then whenever it comes to weights, which I've always been a bigger fan of, and challenging the muscle groups, there's different ways that you do it. Because if you want to get stronger, but you don't want to look more defined, you just want to get stronger, you do what's called 5x5s. You pick a weight that is 80% of your maximum, and you take that and you work that out, 5 sets, 5 reps. So you do it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, 5 times. And then what that does is it builds endurance on the muscle, and then it causes you to gain more strength in that lifting. And then there's the other one that I lean more towards is 3x12s or 4x20s. It's lighter weights, more repetition. But how you do it is so important. And I'm explaining the spiritual matter in this way because it's familiar with me. But I noticed over time, I get real excited. I would go in the gym or go wherever I'm working out, smash the workout, get in there, do everything as fast as possible. I want everything done as soon as possible, get on and move on. And then over the years, I learned that the slower you focus on the contraction, the more endurance and pain that you're gonna feel on a slower motion. When you take your time and really concentrate on what it is that you're doing, you build better results, you get stronger, you appear stronger, you feel better, and you get more results quicker. So slowing down gives you better results. I said all that just to say that, yep. So slowing down, I know, slowing down gives you better results. And I can tell you this much right now, I'm so thankful that we are taking our time and slowing down through this and expounding upon the word and seeing where it takes us. Now, I know some people would prefer me to get on the sprint program and start sprinting a little bit more. But that's okay, because whenever we slow down and endure and focus on what the workout plan is that the Father has for us, we can implement it in our lives. And whenever I was praying about that, meditating about that, and thinking about these things, I was led to something that we read every single Shabbat. Because mind you, this is about routine. This is about repetition. This is about consistency. So every Shabbat, we read the Shema, the lighting of the menorah, the Shema, and the reflection of the prophet that comes after Moshe, just like him. But specifically, the Shema, Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 9, is something that I was charged by the Spirit. If you want a workout program in the Spirit, there you go. It's laid out right there for you. And it's been there for us the entire time. Because this is the posture, this is the program, and this is the way He wants us to lift in His Word. Because this is what it goes into, that detail, and we read it over and over. It's been so repetitive that it should embed itself within us. But sometimes, and I'm going to say this for myself, sometimes I can get caught up in a moment of reading through something and not letting it actually, you take your time and let it actually build you up the way that He wants you built. But it says, Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 9, and it's also titled The Greatest Commandment. It says, "And this is the command, the laws and right rulings which Jehovah Elohim has commanded to teach you to do in the land which you are passing over to possess, so that you fear Jehovah your Elohim to guard all His laws and His commands which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days be prolonged. And you shall hear, O Israel, and shall guard to do that it might be well with you, that you increase greatly, as Jehovah Elohim of your fathers has spoken to you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, Jehovah or Elohim, Jehovah is one." And that's that key word. That's the emphasis on Shema. It's to hear with the implication of doing. We're approaching New Year soon, right? Everybody's familiar with New Year, New Me, that phrase. As someone that was an avid gym goer, I would see, I'd usually actually avoid the gym January because you would never have access to anything. Because there was a lot of New Year, New Me's. A lot of proclamations that would fall short. And I'm going to be fair, I was one of them. So, and I have been before. But the emphasis on hearing is with the intention for us to do. That's something that we should be familiar with. We've learned this, and we should know this. Because ultimately, Yosef was able to obtain that We see that in his life, in the 13 years of trial that he had to go through to leading up to that very moment to where the Pharaoh himself can see that there is no other man with the spirit of Elohim like him. And we know that it goes on to continue to say that he is the one that is wise and discerning. We need to have wise discernment. And for us to have it, is this is our posture. This is what the Father ultimately was giving through Moshe to the second generation of the children of Israel as they were heading into the promised land to take over Canaan. Because the reality is, we're in the wilderness right now and we're on our way to the promised land. But through that, we got a lot of spiritual battles that we need to overcome. And that takes endurance and strength. We know even Yeshua Messiah quoted this. We're not going to go there, but it is Mark 12, 29 through 32, if you want to take that note. But that's the conversation that he had with one of the Pharisees about what is the greatest command. And he quotes the Shema and then says to love your God, to love Yehovah with all your heart, with all your might, with all your being, and to do the same for your neighbor, to represent him. But we're going to move past that part, and we're going to go to verse 5. And it says, and you shall love Yehovah, your Elohim, with all your heart, with all your being, and with all your might, your strength. Because he wants to be your might and your strength. But we know that love is not a feeling-based type of love. We know that's obedience. Because the same thing that Yosef had to endure and go through, do you think he felt like it? Do you think he felt like being in the pit? Do you think he felt like dealing with Potiphar's wife? The assassin's wife? Do you think he felt like being forgotten for 2 extra years? It wasn't feeling-based. It was true love through obedience of the Father. He shamad. He understood that the Father was one, and he wanted to become one with the Father. And that's our goal. But we know being is nefesh, and that deals with the physicality, the breathing creature, and appetite, breath. And it goes into great depth, and that was something also that was mentioned Wednesday. But that nefesh, our being, even the flesh has to sit down and shut up to the spirit and be able to keep moving forward. You keep moving forward. It says, and these words, this is verse 6, which I am commanding you today shall be in your heart. We know those words that he's emphasizing is, of course, what would chapter 5 of Deuteronomy would be, and that's ultimately quoting the stone tablets, the Ten Commandments, which is a beautiful summation of the Father's character for the entirety of the word that goes forth and what he wants from us and expects from us. But now for the training part. Verse 7, and you shall impress, and that word is shanan, which is, means teach diligently with purpose, and you shall impress them upon your children and speak of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. You're telling me all that day in and day out. Because whenever I was convicted of this earlier this week, it made me realize that you could literally try and feel like you're in that coasting area where, oh, I'm good, all right, I'm locked in, I got this routine. And then you realize there's certain things you want to see improve. Well, if you want to see those certain things improve, spiritual things, it's right there. It's impress it upon your children. Speak of them when you sit in your house. So the lights are on. The floor is actually really swept. And it's not empty. You spend time with the Father. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you out there, when you the man outside or the woman outside, when you walking by the way, only his words. And when you lie down, and when you rise up. So that sounds like a three times for sure. When you rise up, when you go out throughout your day, and when you lie down. We could do that every day. It would feel like you're on the fast track of everything changing. But it's like, it's interesting because one of the first thoughts of the flesh was, that seems a little bit extreme. Good. That's what causes growth. You want extreme change, it takes extreme action. And shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on a doorpost of your house and on your gates. Because, I mean, that's a very clear, unclean spirit, not welcome mat on your doorstep. But the reality is, we're in our time of testing. We're given so many good examples about testing. What it's like to go through the wilderness. What it's like that we get every opportunity day in and day out to show that we're committed to the Father. There's another example I wanted to look at for tonight. This is the last example, and I know it's a little bit shorter than normal, but like I said, we got some interesting things planned for tomorrow. Tomorrow evening. It's Daniel 6, and we're just going to go 1 through 10. Of course, anytime we touch the book of Daniel, I'm tempted to do the entire chapter, but the point that the Father really wanted me to obtain in my life, and that I'm sharing tonight, is the focus on patterns, focus on routine, and no more excuses. You just keep going forward. Because it's a true statement, you know, that whenever Pastor made mention, it's not the pastor's job for everybody to fix everyone. He shows up and does what the Father called him to do. And then prayerfully and carefully prays for each and every one of us to actually adhere to the word that goes forth and actually apply it, to actually take the program seriously and grow with it and yield the results. I could tell you anytime I have a bad day that's in the spirit, it's not a bad day. It's just, it's a raw verb. Get to take a lesson out of it. Any day that flesh burns in control, a good day could be a terrible day. That's just the way it is. They're complete opposites of each other, and we know this. But let's look at Daniel's situation and example. We're dealing with Darwash now. It pleased Darwash to appoint over the reign 120 viceroys to be over the reign. And over them three governors, of whom Daniel was one, and that these viceroys should give account to them, and the sovereign should suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and viceroys because an excellent spirit was in him. And the sovereign planned to appoint him over all the reign. Oh, kind of sounds familiar. Then the governors and viceroys sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the reign. But they were unable to find occasion or corruption because he was steadfast and no negligence or corruption was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any occasion against Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his Elah, or Elohim." Then these governors and viceroys tumultuously, I hope I got that close, gathered before the sovereign and said this to him, "Sovereign Darwash, live forever. All the governors of the reign, the nobles and viceroys and counselors and advisors have consulted together and established a royal decree to make a strong interdict that whoever petitions any Allah or man for 30 days except you, O sovereign, is thrown into the den of lions. Now, O sovereign, establish the
interdict and sign the writing so that it is not to be changed according to the law of Medes and Persians, which does not pass away. So Sovereign Darius signed the written interdict, and Daniel, when he knew that the writing was signed, went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before Allah as he had done before. Never stop petitioning before the Father. We see the Shema in action there. We see that same repetition that has to take place for that consistency that the Father's looking for in our lives, and a good example that we're given here. And the fact that we know the rest of the story is probably one of the most spoken about Bible stories whenever he gets thrown in the lion's den and overcomes that because of this level of commitment. And it's like I shared before in the previous chapters of Daniel. Whenever we were dealing with Sovereign Nebuchadnezzar, I'm chuckling to myself because I almost accidentally called him a demon. But he had a really bad attitude. And we were dealing with his temper. And ultimately that he wanted to crank that bad boy up seven times hotter. And of course, like I said, with the research that I did and looked into it, seven times hotter was 12,500 degrees Fahrenheit. Then of course, looking into thermonuclear explosions and seeing what the blast heat that comes off of that, 2,482 degrees Fahrenheit, 12,248 degrees Fahrenheit, if I remember correctly. It's probably off by a few. Really speaks volumes to what it means, what kind of favor we can obtain whenever it comes to taking serving the Father as seriously as possible. Mm-hmm. The levels that he's able to take us to. The trust that he has in us to be able to represent him well and wisely. As Messiah said, be as wise as a serpent, but gentle as a dove. We got these beautiful examples right here before us. And looking at the condition of the world, things could change forever until we hear that trumpet. But whether it's nuclear warfare, whether it's lion's dens, whether it's earthquakes, famine, flood, and as the list goes on with the judgments, we could be unscathed from that if we remain in that protection, remain in that sukkah, remain in him. Keep our house ready with the lights on so that way we can be able-bodied to be able to be in the same position that Yosef ultimately was able to enter into. It might just be with different levels. If anybody ends up at a pyramid in front of a pharaoh, y'all please let me know. But with all that being said, that's what I have for tonight. That's what the Father put on my heart to share and to be encouraged. And if anything, be encouraged to take 1 week and read the Shema, 9 verses, at least once a day, to help remind us, if we need that reminding, if we need that reminding, that there's a certain level of standard that the Father wants for us. And it's not impossible. He's given us the perfect trainer, both the Word and the living Word. And we're just thankful for that. With that being said, I love y'all. Shabbat shalom.